Welcome to Stand in the Gap Today with your host, the Honorable Sam Rohrer, President of the American Pastors Network, addressing the most pressing issues impacting our economy, our homes, our churches, our culture, and our daily lives from a biblical and constitutional perspective. Stand in the Gap Today, transforming the culture one heart at a time.
Well, hello and welcome to Stand in the Gap Today. And ladies and gentlemen, due to the seriousness of the theme that we're going to discuss today, the seriousness to all Americans, I'm going to jump right into it. You know, and I know, that we all live in a dangerous world. Nations like Iran, Islam itself, and up until recently, and maybe who knows beyond that, North Korea, they've all threatened to destroy the United States and freedom and to snuff out what has been for such a long time this shining city on a hill. Yet into this mix of threats to American security comes a nation that was once heavily courted, subsidized, and idolized by many, and that nation has now adopted and approved an emperor for life and a disturbingly evident strategy for world control. That nation is none other than China. Our theme for today is this: China, the greatest existential threat to America's security. I'm Sam Rohrer, and we're going to be joined today by co-host Evangelist Dave Kistler and Dr. Gary Dahl, Senior Pastor of Faith Baptist Church in Altoona, Pennsylvania. Our special guest is Kevin Freeman. Kevin is considered to be one of the world's leading experts in economic warfare and financial terrorism. He started and he operates the investment management and consulting firm called Freeman Global Holdings. Now, Kevin has briefed members of both the U.S. House and Senate, present and past, the CIA, DIA, the FBI, the SEC, Homeland Security, the Justice Department, as well as local and state law enforcement agencies. His research has been presented in critical Department of Defense studies that he has presented to the Secretary of Defense. He's also a senior member, or senior fellow, rather, at the Center for Security Policy and a contributing editor to the Counterterrorist Magazine. So we have an eminently qualified guest, and I want to welcome him right now to the program. Kevin, thank you for being with us today on the program.
Thank you, sir. It's a pleasure to be a part of this.
Well, we've talked a lot about China, and on this program, Kevin, we talk a lot about geopolitical efforts and issues from a lot of perspectives. We've talked about China on many levels before, but your professional focus on economics, finance, investments, both nationally and internationally, puts you in a very interesting perspective, particularly when you take and you hook it together with the concept of warfare, and you put those two together, which many people, I don't actually think in terms of economics being a potential tool for warfare. So I thought it would be great for you to be on this program today and for us to talk about this aspect. So before we get into this matter of China specifically, I'd like to have you describe in just brief terms here why our listeners and others being part of this program should think in terms of economics, of not just having just a job, but how economics can and is being used as a tool for warfare.
Sure. Well, thank you, Sam. The reality of it is that we have a very Western mindset, and our mindset has been honed by the media, it's honed by our tradition and so forth. We tend to see economics as an opportunity for gain financially. And so what we see is a marketplace. When you look around the world, whether it's China or Europe or Asia or Latin America or anywhere else, that's a marketplace, a place where we can acquire goods and a place where we can sell goods. Those that are not in our Western mindset see the world as a battle space, and they see that as an opportunity to take a financial advantage. And that was pretty clear during the Cold War. It was obvious that the Soviet Union was using economics for their benefit, and in geopolitical terms, we were looking for new markets, but we recognized that there was this iron curtain and there's this divide between communism and capitalism. And so we understood that, and because we understood that, President Reagan was able to use economic tools and weapons and win the Cold War. But when the wall fell in Berlin, when the Cold War ended officially and the Soviet Union collapsed, we no longer thought in those terms. President Clinton in particular said, we're going to divide economics from national security and geopolitics, and American companies go make as much money as you can anywhere in the world, and we're a part of a great global free market, and we're all going to profit from it. And then defense, we saw solely in kinetic terms of tanks and planes and soldiers and so forth. So that change has happened. America has forgotten that the world's economy is a battle space. We just see it as an opportunity to make money and invest money and sell things and buy things.
Before we get into some of the specifics with respect to the threat China poses to us economically, I want to ask you this. There's a lot of jousting going on currently between President Trump and the country of China from an economic standpoint. We've imposed, you know, different types of tariffs. They've retaliated and are imposing tariffs back our direction. If we could use a sports analogy to try to help our listeners understand what's going on here and exactly where we are. Is this legitimate? I mean, is this a good thing the president's doing to try to level the playing field, so to speak? And if it is, or even if it isn't, to use, again, the sports analogy, are we in the first quarter of this, second quarter, third quarter? Fourth? I mean, where are we and how serious is all of this that's going on currently?
Well, using a sports analogy, actually, we just concluded halftime and we're down 50-0 in a football game. What essentially happened is, 20 years ago plus, actually more than that, the Chinese asked for and received ultimately about 20 years ago most favored nation status, and they wanted entry into the World Trade Organization. And they said, we're a poor emerging market, and the sales pitch went like this. If you will allow us to grow and build our markets, we'll become more open and more free. Yes, we're still a communist nation, unlike Russia. We're still a communist nation, first and foremost, run by the Communist Party, but it's a new brand of communism, and we're going to be good trading partners, and we'll give you access to cheap labor, and we'll eventually be your largest market. You'll sell goods here, and we bought that hook, line, and sinker. Even though they actually had very specific war plans built up, strategies determined, titled Unrestricted Warfare, we bought that and said, we'll be a great trading partner. Okay, so we invested heavily in China. We allowed them to sell goods and services here, even though they weren't allowing us to sell at the same level there. And we said, okay, once they emerge, they'll become more democratic. They'll become more of an open society. They'll become more friendly to us. This is worth it to bring this billion-plus people into the global marketplace. And so we did that trade. And here, 20 years later, they've actually taken an enormous amount of our manufacturing base, our wealth. They've stolen intellectual property and so forth. And now President Trump is waking us up to the reality. Over the past two decades, we've done nothing but hand them things, and they've taken advantage in our markets and elsewhere. And we are far behind. They're no longer an emerging nation. That they may be the largest economy on earth, if not the largest, they're certainly the second largest, depending on how you measure it. And we just handed them enormous opportunities, and President Trump says it's not working.
Let me break in right here. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to Stand in the Gap today. Sam Rohr, Gary Dahl, Dave Kistler, and our special guest, Kevin Freeman. We talk about economic warfare, and the theme specifically is China, the greatest existential threat to America's security. When we come back, we're going to talk about what China's goal. Hello, I'm your host, Sam Rohr. Can I talk with you for just a moment? We love to hear from our listeners, to hear your suggestions and which themes and guests you like the most. Let me share two recent listener comments. A handwritten note from Judy, a $25 a month partner, said this, quote, thanks so very much for giving us news that we just can't find anywhere else on radio or TV, end quote. And Bill said this, quote, every day at lunchtime, our entire furniture factory shuts down to eat. The highlight of the day for 25 of us is Stand in the Gap today. Your comments are true and thought-provoking. It challenges us to think clearly about all the nonsense around us. We love the biblical and constitutional perspective. There's just no one else like you, end quote. Now, if Judy and Bill's comments connect with you, would you join with us as they have for just a few dollars a month? It would make all of the difference of us staying on your station. Just go to standinthegapradio.com and set up a monthly gift. And while you're there, sign up for our emails, too.
You're listening to Stand in the Gap today. For more information, visit our website at standinthegapradio.com.
For many years now, nations around the world, including the United States, have worked hard to develop relationships with China, the most populous nation on Earth. We heard some discussion from our guest, Kevin Freeman, just a moment ago about that. And what promised to be a large, friendly trading partner with the hope of making billions of dollars in profits for many companies has now become a voracious, dictating, and ambitious, threatening nation. Not content to bring economic prosperity to its people, the atheistic threat of Red China, Communist China, is springing to life and quite literally threatening the world. And the failure to understand China and its many goals may well undermine and destroy the economic and political freedom we currently enjoy in the West. President Trump is undertaking a clear review of all the agreements with China, declaring that they have been stealing intellectual property from the United States and is on the road to military challenge. So the question is, and we're going to answer it in this segment, what are China's worldwide goals? What do they want? And where are they headed? And with that, I want to welcome back in Kevin Freeman. He leads Freeman Global Holdings, and he has written a number of books that you can find at his website at secretweapon.com. He contributes to the Counterterrorist magazine, and he's been a counselor and advice giver to most all the agencies of federal government, and as well as our CIA, FBI, and other agencies. And with that, I want to welcome you back to the program today, Kevin.
Thanks, Sam. Yeah, and secretweapon.org rather than .com. But it's great being here.
Okay, very good. Secretweapon.org is what you're saying?
Yes.
Okay, I picked that up wrong. Correction, ladies and gentlemen, make sure you have that. Okay, Kevin, let me go right into it. In terms of national security and always having to be looking out for enemies of our nation and our way of life, one of those requirements is knowing the ambitions and the goals of nations like China. And that's a critical first step. You've been a part of that for a long time, and that's why you are in an expert position to comment. When it comes to China, and that's what our focus is here today, what do we know about China's long-term goals for itself as a nation? What do they want to become?
Well, to understand China, you have to understand their history, and their history is a long and storied history. The Chinese people see themselves as the rightful dominant people on the planet. They believe that their nation historically has been the most powerful nation, the most strongest economy, and so forth. But they've been kind of humiliated during the period of the American ascendancy. You know, from 1800 and to the present, the Chinese have been invaded and subjugated and really looked down on in many ways. And the Communist Party, when they took over, was very uniquely Chinese. And the promise there was, in 100 years, we will be the most dominant nation on the planet again. And so they began what my friend Mike Pillsbury calls the 100-year marathon, an effort under communism to take this society and make them the most powerful nation on earth. So their goal, the Communist Party took over in 1949, their goal is by 2049 that they dominate economically, militarily, politically, and in every respect, they're number one in the world. And that really is what they're trying to achieve.
You know, it's been interesting to see how China has developed as an outsider over the last number of years, particularly over the last decade, because I can remember when it was really recognized by most of the world as a backward country. But certainly they have progressed, and almost everywhere you go here in the United States of America now, you see Chinese businessmen and so forth, you know, doing what they can to make inroads into our country. But Kevin, to build upon what you just said there to Sam, China is becoming a superpower, and as a superpower, they actually are a superpower, but as a superpower, is it their desire to replace the United States of America as the world's most dominant world power? And if it is, how close are they in doing that?
Well, there's no question that that is the inherent desire of the Chinese leadership. They feel it's their rightful place. And in the year 2013, they put it out officially in their news agencies and elsewhere, and they've told our trading partners and our allies and adversaries alike around the world, we must de-Americanize the world. America is a weak nation. We've screwed up. We're in debt. We're an immoral nation. We're doing all these things wrong. And the goal is to de-Americanize the world. And they have a very strategic plan to go about that.
Kevin, let me ask you this. Obviously, many people that are older that listen to this program and those that are younger may have heard the term, but certainly those of us that are older remember the phrase Red China, which was a way of describing Communist China. That phrase and that terminology and that label has certainly been downplayed significantly. You'll hardly ever hear any reference to it whatsoever in the media or anywhere else for that matter. So my question to you is this. Is China still a totalitarian, atheistic, communistic country? And if so, have their goals changed at all, or are they still the same?
No, their goals are absolutely the same. What's changed is their approach. They've become a much more pragmatic promoter of those atheistic goals. So for actually more than a decade, they appeared to be very pro-Christian. And I have friends that would go over there and say, oh, you don't understand, Kevin, the Chinese Communist Party, they're pro-Christian. They just don't want cults in. And so they're just promoting good churches. Well, that was a propaganda effort by the government to try and sell us that they were the most Christian nation on earth. Now, amazingly, what's been unleashed there is a massive movement towards Christianity, and they may have the greatest number of Christians of any nation on earth, and it is something that the Chinese Communist Party fears. But they promoted to the West how Christian they were in order to get support and to kind of take away that Red China communist atheist label. But don't be in any way fooled. This is a communist nation that has put out a serious propaganda effort to make sure we don't talk about Red China. We don't talk about the fact that they're atheist. And the churches are under severe persecution. The true churches there, they're having buildings taken away from them. They're having pastors jailed. They are cracking down on what we would consider mainstream Christianity going through. But it's blossoming thanks to the moving of the Holy Spirit and the work of God.
You know, Kevin, I'm really thankful that you brought that out because one of the other ministries that I work with, actually founded back in 1989, has missionaries in China. And from the missionaries that we have over there, some Americans, some Chinese nationals, they've got to be very, very careful. They will find that sometimes in their services, there will be people from the government in there spying them out. And if they say the wrong thing, you know, they can be taken off into jail. And even when our administration from our mission goes over there, most of the time they can't themselves speak in these churches simply because of the fact they might break some law that the Chinese would take them off into prison. So even though the church is growing over there, yet the government has their thumb down upon many, particularly of the evangelical Christian churches that are there.
Absolutely. And with the facial recognition technology that they're instituting and they're introducing social credit scores, they're actually monitoring all their citizens, and they have labeled the missionaries and the pastors that are there. They may not be allowed to travel. They may not be allowed to open bank accounts. They may be very restricted because Big Brother is watching in China, and they're coming mm-hmm. against evangelical Christianity.
And Kevin, absolutely. I think in a question that Gary asked there, I think was a critical one. And I want to go just a little bit further here in the last minute or two in talking about China. There is, and we're going to get into strategy in the next segment, strategy more of how they are implements or strategies of war against the West and the United States. But you brought up some of the points there about what they're doing internally. It appears that with the Emperor for Life designation now that the president has, and the Communist Party seeming to having taken a stronger hold on what's taking place, that this move, in your reference to facial recognition, other ways of controlling it, that they are really leading the way in their own country to a most totalitarian form of economics, of control of all the way through. Talk to me about this perspective. I mean, do they think that they have to get a handle and get a firm hold on their own people before they actually begin to work strategy outside, or are they kind of working these two things together?
Well, they're working them together, but I'll tell you the one thing the Communist Party fears. It's not the United States. It's not our military. It's not the Russian military. It's not any military. What they fear is an internal uprising. They fear the people getting away from them, and they will do everything they can to keep control because ultimately, you know, Emperor for Life, President Xi, is thinking the worst, the only outcome that could displace him would be an uprising of the people where they call for his head.
And so they're going to do everything that they can. Now, you mentioned facial recognition. Talk just another about 30 seconds here again. What else are they doing, like the scores, the profiling? What are they doing to control their own people?
Well, the social credit score is just an amazing thing. You can't post on any of the social media. You can't even access the internet unless you have been a good person on this credit score. And, you know, for Christians growing up in the church in America, this is almost like the mark of the beast. You can't buy or sell without this permission from the government. And they'll look at the face. They can identify a face in a crowd of 100,000 in a matter of seconds. They can find one person and tell you exactly who they are. They can either look for an individual, or they can scan the crowd and find any individual that they want.
Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to some tremendously sobering information relative to what's happening in China. And I will say, as we've covered this program before, the concept of facial recognition and tracking, it's already in this country here too. So we all need to be very aware. Now, when we come back, we're going to continue our discussion with our special guest, Kevin Freeman, on this matter of China being the greatest existential threat to America's security. We're going to talk about Chinese strategy. You're going to not want to miss this. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Stand in the Gap today, discussing the pressing issues facing our culture from a biblical and constitutional perspective. Now let's rejoin our host.
If you're just joining us today, we welcome you to the program, and we know that when people listen live here at the noon hour, you're coming and going. You may be going to get a bite to eat. You may be on your way back to work. I don't know, but we're glad that you are with us today. And if you're listening delayed, like so many do, we're glad that you are a part of this program. I ask you to communicate with us. Let us know that you're listening, what you think about this program, what you think about the guests. If you have ideas, suggestions, pass them along to us by going to our site at standinthegapradio.com or communicating to us on our free app, which you can get easily just by going and putting in the phrase Stand in the Gap. Also, I want you to know that we have a TV program that has been started about 6 weeks ago, also called Stand in the Gap, and we deal with transcending issues, like how to successfully cross the racial divide. We've talked about gun control, the Second Amendment, and God. A number of these things we do in that program, and you can pick up those and watch them on our app or the website, or you can go to our YouTube channel at Stand in the Gap TV. All of those you can find there, and I'd ask you, if you do like the program and you are finding it to help you, which so many do, communicate it to a friend. Pass it along on Facebook if you use that, or Twitter if you use that, or email a friend, or just open your window and yell out the door to your next-door neighbor. Whatever it takes, but have them be a part so that they can benefit, as we know so many of you are. When we go back into it right now, we're talking about China today. It's in the news on all fronts, and we're talking now about the China being really an enemy of the United States. We talked about their goals. Kevin Freeman laid out last segment that their goals are a part of a 100-year plan announced by the Communist Party way back to be completed in about the year 2040. That is to take over the world, and they're on their way. We're going to talk now about strategies, because their ambitious goals for world domination are unequaled, except for the fact that they have very sinister and successful strategies for achieving those goals. One is using their economic strength, coupled with their long-term generational view of strategy, linked to their atheistic and dictatorial view of government and society, and their utilitarian view of life of their people, as I would say. China, through all this, has developed a well-thought-out and effective set of strategies that escape the understanding of most people and most Americans. And unless we address them very, very quickly, if we're not already perhaps too late, China may well achieve its goals. And that goal is going to be to the demise of other nations, including the United States, who they desperately want to replace because they believe that we don't deserve the right to be a dominating nation anymore, that it really is them. And so I want to bring back in now Kevin Freeman. He's a leading expert on economic warfare and financial terrorism. He's also the author of two books, Game Plan, How to Protect Yourself from the Coming Cyber Economic Attack, and Secret Weapon, how economic terrorism took down the U.S. stock market and why it can happen again. Both of those you can find on Amazon or on his website at secretweapon.org. So, Kevin, let me bring you back in here now. Eastern Thought, and you've commented on that, and particularly China, holds a long-term view of strategy. In the failure to understand that, most Western nations don't think that way, frankly. We tend to think here and now. We do so to our own harm. When it comes to China, I want to ask you this question. How do they approach their choice of strategies for achieving their worldwide goals for economic and military superiority? How do they do that? How are they linking together? And are they being successful? You've already commented that you really think they are, but tell us a little bit more. How successful are they in achieving their goals?
Well, they're taking advantage of our weakness, which is to have a short-term mentality and here and now, and they think in the long term. And I'll give you one illustrative lesson I learned when I visited Shenzhen, China, in the late 1990s. I was there. I was working for the Templeton Organization at the time, which is one of the premier global investment franchises. They have mutual funds and so forth. And I was there with Dr. Mark Mobius, who is probably the best emerging market investor of the last 100 years. And Dr. Mobius took us in to see a television manufacturer, original equipment manufacturer that every major TV company in the world used. So it's Sony and Panasonic and Zenith and all of the big TV, Magnavox, everyone would use them because they had cheaper labor and they'd clean the facilities and offer them really cheap prices. And so I asked the question, why should we invest in your company? You get set margins. You're only making these TVs for a certain price, and it's well below the market price. And they said, oh, that's just for now. But we're acquiring the technology of all these other companies, and we're going to put out the better television using all of their intellectual property. And they didn't say it that blatantly, but that's what they meant. And they've essentially stole that technology. They had a longer-term view. All of the TV makers in the West, their view was, well, we're getting a good deal. We might as well take advantage of this. And this goes to the communist idea that they will sell us the rope with which we hang them. And so they're taking advantage in every respect. The long view, I'll give you another example. There was an individual that was sent here by China to study at LSU. He was a doctor, and he got his PhD at LSU, and he went to work for a little company in Kansas that grew very specialized rice. And the rice you could use for biotechnology. And that specialized rice, the seeds are worth millions and millions of dollars. Well, a Chinese delegation came in and visited this guy they planted here more than two decades ago and got a PhD and lived a life in Kansas. And he handed it to them because it was his duty. That was an investment of human capital they made 20 years ago as a spy. And what they walked away with millions, well, we caught them fortunately. At the border, customs agents found these rice seeds, and the PhD is now sitting in jail and awaiting sentencing. Point being, they're making a very long-term strategic play to steal technology, and they're doing it to take down our economy because they know that's a wiser form. Financial warfare is what they call it, and they pattern it after George Soros.
Kevin, let me give you a couple of the strategies that China is trying to use against us. And then I want to ask you if you could to prioritize these. And if I leave something out that's, you need to mention, obviously, bring that in. But economic, cyber, military, banking, currency, these are all ways that China is trying to strategize against the West and specifically against the U.S. Put those in order of importance and anything else that may need to go in as well.
Well, the first strategy was economic. In the book Unrestricted Warfare, written by two senior colonels from the People's Liberation Army in 1999, they said, first, you must amass a great deal of capital. So that was their first strategy. They've already done that. They have over a trillion dollars worth of our debt that they own, and they see that as a means by which they can humble us. But first, amass a great deal of capital. Second, you cause a financial crisis. Third, you bury a hacker detachment, And fourth, you do an attack on the civilian electricity network, the ATM network, or whatever, using that hacker detachment. And ultimately, the goal is to cause street riots, a political crisis, and a panic. And those are the steps that they outlined to take down America. And what have we seen? We've seen them amass a great deal of capital because they've used unfair trading practices. We've seen them put hacker detachments in place. We had a financial crisis in 2008 that they did take advantage of. We've seen them executing this strategy. They have yet to use the one to take down the electric grid, for example, with cyber hacks or whatever. They've not yet gone that far, but I think that's the next weapon in their arsenal to really humble America.
Kevin, what really does China think of us, that is, the United States of America? To dig into that just a little bit more, particularly from your perspective, would they consider themselves to be at war with us right now? I mean, I know we are probably engaged with an economic war with them, where the stakes are very, very high. But otherwise, and beyond that, would they consider themselves to be in a war with us, whether it be the economy or in any other way?
Absolutely, they believe that we're at a war. That's the point of the book, Unrestricted Warfare. But the way you fight a war, according to Sun Tzu, the art of war, is you fight a war where we don't know we're fighting. And that's, they want to keep us, and so they've gone to enormous lengths, purchasing theater chains, putting Confucius Institutes in our nation, to convince us that they're our friends, they're our allies, that we're working together, we're not at war. But in their heart of hearts, they know we're at war. We just don't know it yet.
Well, Kevin, that's an amazing thing. With that being the case, if we don't believe that we're at war, we will not respond. We're going to talk about it in the next segment, ladies and gentlemen, what we should be doing based on what we know now. But I just have an article that came from The Atlantic here just the other day that talks about what they are doing relative to wanting to control the internet as an example for the world. Talk to us a little bit about that, because that's a frankly scary thing.
Well, we see the internet as a global gift to mankind. We invented it. I mean, a vice president claimed, you know, I invented the internet. But the reality is America did invent the internet, and we've shared it with the world. And we've slowly given up our control of it. The Chinese want to take that control. You know, their claim is, well, we can't have one nation dominant. But yet they're moving that direction so that they can control their population and really the rest of the world using internet protocols. They're doing the same thing with space. The Chinese intend to dominate every aspect of life on this planet, and they see every other nation as serving their needs, and they're moving rapidly towards it.
And only have just a couple seconds left. Are they ahead of us?
Well, yes. They have some problems internally. They've got massive debts, and you can't a non-market economy should lose to a market economy if they're competing fairly. So we should win this race, but so far we're not aware that it is a race, and so, yes, they are ahead.
Ladies and gentlemen, you are listening to Stand in the Gap today. I'm Sam Rohr, accompanied today by Gary Dalt and Dave Kistler, our special guest Kevin Freeman, the author of the book, Game Plan, How to Protect Yourself from the Coming Cyber Economic Attack and Secret Weapon, How Economic Terrorism Took Down the U.S. Stock Market and Why It Can Happen Again. When we come back now in just a couple of minutes, we're going to talk about what the United States and the Trump administration must do understanding the strategy. Hello, this is Sam Rohr. Although the term Christian education doesn't occur in the Bible, it does speak of the moral and spiritual instruction of children. It places a high value on knowledge, both of God and His works. It describes the moral and spiritual fruits of this knowledge and defines its ultimate purpose, the growth of your child in godliness of character and action. That's why we suggest you consider BJU Press K-12 materials. Your child's a unique individual created for a specific purpose. Proper instruction that includes the Bible and the relational influence of godly teachers produces a pure heart and a willing mind. The Bible calls that success. BJU Press materials are well written, grade level appropriate, and biblically integrated. They teach critical thinking skills and keep your child engaged and excited about learning. If you're a Christian school teacher or administrator, a homeschool teacher, or a parent who just wants your child to learn more, start by exploring the BJU Press website. Visit BJUPress.com. That's BJUPress.com.
You're listening to Stand in the Gap today, discussing the pressing issues facing our culture from a biblical and constitutional perspective. Now let's rejoin our host.
In this last segment, we're going to deal with the issue of America's required response to all of this information that we have talked about today in a program about China being the greatest existential threat to America's security. Our special guest, Kevin Freeman, an economic warfare and financial terrorism expert, having given advice and counsel to all levels of government, the Department of Defense, and an editorial writer on the whole range of issues we're talking about today. You know, in thinking about this, ladies and gentlemen, we say, what do we do about this? I recall an old saying that goes like this: to be forewarned is to be forearmed. And that's generally a true statement if someone has their eyes and their ears open, in fact, wants to protect their life or the lives of their loved ones. You know, one of the major reasons for national security efforts in our nation or any nation is to be alert to the goals and the strategies of the enemy who would seek to harm that nation or its citizens. And the enemies can be ideological, they can be financial, economic, military, or any number of things. When it comes to China, their strategies to dominate the West and the U.S. is, frankly, all of these plus more. So the question is, what is the U.S. doing to confront these strategies? We're going to talk about that now in this concluding segment, about being forewarned. Our guest certainly knows what's happening. A lot of people know, but what is being done? Are we being forearmed? We want to talk specifically about the Trump administration and what they are doing on behalf of addressing this serious Chinese threat. So, Kevin, let me go right into this on this matter with you. The president, unlike any president we've seen, have engaged the enemies of America across the spectrum. I've never seen such a thing. We've talked about it on this program a lot, but he went into this presidency accusing China of being an unlevel playing field participant. He charged them with stealing intellectual property, cyber hacking, building man-made islands in the South China Sea as a way of positioning themselves to control shipping in the waterways of the Far East. All of these things. And this question I have for you, from your observation, does President Trump really get it like we're talking about today? Does he understand the existential threat China posed to U.S. security? And is that perhaps part of his passion and his motivation for what he's doing right now with the tariffs as a part of the strategy trying to rebuff it?
Well, I have little doubt as to whether he gets it. He, on the campaign trail, he spoke very directly and plainly, and then he brought in advisors like Dr. Peter Navarro, who co-authored a book that the Center for Security Policy published that I wrote a chapter in on intellectual property, titled Warning Order. And Dr. Navarro understands these things, and even his economic advisors, Kevin Hassett and others, have been very direct in saying they get it. And best of all, you know, I think John Bolton understands, and he recently brought in Fred Flights as his chief of staff. And I think, you know, I know Fred, and I think these are all people who truly understand what China is doing and are preparing the United States government to confront wherever we have the possibility. So the talk of trade war is absolutely a strategy necessary in responding to this very direct threat from China. I hope we never go to a trade war. I think free trade would be great, but they've taken advantage for so long and stolen so much. You have to do something to stop and catch their attention, and I believe the president's on the right track in doing that.
You know, it's amazing to me, Kevin, it seems like he has insight that many of the other previous presidents have not had, particularly recently as it relates to China and a number of other things. But what must President Trump do in light of what's going on about China's ambitions to control the world? Is he doing all that he can do? Should he do more? If you were to talk to Donald Trump right now, what would you say to him? And that we are on over 400 radio stations across the nation, what will you say to the American people concerning what we should do regarding China?
Well, the first thing I say to the American people is this: China problem came in, and it's been both administrations, both parties, but it came in through the Clinton administration. It came in through genuine collusion influencing election. There was illegal Chinese money put into the election in 1996 on behalf of the Clintons. We know that the people went to jail for it. The Democrat National Committee had to return money that came from the Chinese government. It was completely illegal. It was absolute collusion. And I wish that Robert Mueller would go and look at that history. China China's been involved in our elections long term. What I would tell the president is he's on the right track. China is a serious threat to the world, and we have to stand up for America. They've been stealing maybe $5 trillion worth of intellectual property from the United States has been stolen. Lockheed Martin recently looked and said, wow, the new Chinese fighter jet looks almost identical to the one that we spent billions of dollars building and creating. They've just hacked our submarines. They are at war with us. So the reality, President Trump, we're at war here, and we need to make certain that this is not a hot war, shooting war, but we also can no longer have our intellectual property stolen. We can no longer have our economy being undermined. We have to stand up. We're in a better position here, and the American people, if they realize we're in a global economic war, they can stand up with their investments, with their spending patterns and so forth, and we can win this war. Absolutely, we can win. We're in a better position. We have a better system. We have better intellectual property, but we have to recognize it before it's too late.
Ladies and gentlemen, you've heard it. To be forewarned is to be forearmed. We have an ability, but we have to be awakened. Kevin, I want to, just in the last closing moments, I want to bring in North Korea here. And for this reason, that play is unfolding. What happens ultimately in North Korea, I don't know. But North Korean leader went to China. North Korea has not ever been a real good friend of China. We know that. But North Korea has been a useful idiot or a pawn in the hands of China. The president, I think, has a lot of pieces at play here on this chessboard. What do you think ultimately happens? And does China do something significant to keep North Korea from coming out of their sphere into the sphere of South Korea and the United States?
Well, absolutely. They will do whatever they can. Can you imagine the troops that we have stationed in South Korea if those were on China's border, what that would mean? And so they're very fearful that North Korea. But on the other hand, we have the allure of North Korea being able to join the world and enjoy some of the global prosperity. It's like an area of darkness where prosperity is not yet reached, and we have the opportunity there to use the carrot and say, hey, if you will come this direction, you'll see economic prosperity and success and so forth. And there's a fascination. That was the allure that brought the Russian people. They saw the West and they saw the prosperity that happened, and they wondered why communism had treated them so poorly. North Korea has not enjoyed any of the economic benefits as China's puppets. But it will be a very tricky thing to get them out of the Chinese orbit. If it's successful, it will be an amazing thing for the world.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're about to conclude the program. Kevin Freeman, our guest, he has a couple of books you want to find by going to his website at secretweapon.org. And you need to pick up and find more about what he's doing. We just only have a few seconds actually left here. Dave, I'd like to ask you to pray for these things, pray for a president, pray for leadership, and the recognition that we are in a war here that's real.
Father, we thank you for giving us this opportunity to communicate across the airways. Thank you for Kevin and, Lord, his insight. I pray that the people that have listened today will take what they've heard and do something with it. We pray also for our national leadership, our president, vice president, all the members of his team. Give them, Lord, wisdom to understand the battle we're in and to do the right thing as a result, in Jesus' name.
Thank you for being with us today, ladies and gentlemen. Again, on behalf of Staying in the Gap Today, our entire team, I'm Sam Rohr, Gary Dahl, and Dave Kistler. Today on the program, and again, our special guest, Kevin Freeman. And you can find his books by going to Amazon or to secretweapon.org. Thanks for being with us, and Stand in the Gap for Truth wherever you are. Tomorrow, we IQ Al Rasuli. Join us tomorrow.
We hope you've enjoyed listening to Stand in the Gap Today. Stand in the Gap Today is another quality ministry of the American Pastors Network, addressing the most pressing issues affecting the culture from a biblical and constitutional perspective. We take seriously the command to be salt and light and the mission to declare truth in the public square. Stand in the Gap Radio is supported through the prayers and tax-deductible financial gifts from listeners like you. Would you please consider a donation to help us increase our outreach of biblical truth? To learn more about us and make your donation, please visit standinthegapradio.com. You may also give from our smartphone app. Download the Stand in the Gap app. Search for it in your web store under the heading Stand in the Gap. Thanks for listening, and be sure to tune in every weekday at the same time for Stand in the Gap Today.